What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
At Kroger, we know the minute a tomato is picked off the vine, the fresh timer starts. The sooner we get our produce to you, the fresher it is. That's why we've completely overhauled our process to shorten the time from harvest to home for our tomatoes, strawberries, and salads. Because we know how much you love fresh produce, we give you more time to enjoy your tasty fruits and veggies at home. So whether you're shopping in-store, picking up, or prefer delivery, we're committed to bringing you the freshest produce possible. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Forever Dog.
Gerard wanted to ask you about your skin regimen real quick.
I just want to know before we start, because your skin looks flawless, and I'm trying to make sure mine stays moisturized. I just want to know, is it water, you know, cocoa butter, like, you know, shea butter?
Oil-free moisturizer.
Oil-free moisturizer.
Okay.
Okay. Listen, you think it's a game. I'm about to write that down.
And also, once you find what works, stay with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's
right. Damn, that was so smooth. God dang, that was...
Oh, man. I can feel my five heartbeats right there.
John, don't do this.
I got a laugh, so you know, I don't know if that was embarrassing. I feel like it was pretty, you know, I was just trying to be smooth.
Your five individual heartbeats, you can feel them.
Yeah, because you know, you heard it.
Wait, just start the show, John.
All right, let's start the show. Okay, here we go.
Jonathan Raylock,
James III,
Gerard Milligan.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
I know everything that's going on in these streets.
Oh, okay.
That's from A Day to Die. See, I did a quote from A Day to Die. You know what I'm saying?
I thought you were going to sing I thought you were going to sing a five heartbeat song.
I was going to sing, but I was like, I'm not trying to embarrass myself. I'm going to do a line from A Day to Die.
I appreciate you keeping it current.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Respect. Oh, goodness, respect.
For those of you who are listening to us for the first time, we are a film review podcast. We review the films of leading Black actors. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood. But today, we have a very, very special guest.
Wait, hold on, Bray. I got to do my drums.
I mean, he needs no real introduction.
Well, Bray?
Okay.
No, I got to do, especially, I got to do my drums. Hold on. All right.
Okay. Wow. Leon's in the studio with us, everyone. Please welcome Leon. Thank you.
Leon, this is a delight. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Can't wait to get into this with you.
Hell yeah. You know you cool as hell, just the first name. I'm trying to get on that. That's some cool shit right there. I love that.
For those who don't know, Leon is starring in the film A Day to Die, starring also Bruce Willis and Frank Grillo, I believe is how you pronounce his name.
Frank Grillo and Kevin Dillon.
Grillo, that's right.
Yes,
Kevin Dillon. Directed by Wes Miller.
Fire.
It is in select theaters and on demand March 1st, 4th, which is now. So guys, please go and see that. And yeah, I mean, we wanted to, you know, honestly, we're pretty huge fans of you on the show. So this is special for us, I would say.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
We're breaking tradition out here. you know?
And yeah, we recently took a look at the Five Heartbeats, of course, which is an incredible film directed by the legend Robert Townsend, starring Leon, Robert Townsend himself, Michael Wright, Harry J. Lennox, Harold Nicholas, Tika Wells. I mean, it honestly a stacked cast, like,
yeah,
for real.
Yeah, and not only is it stacked, if you saw the people that came out to audition for it, you would have blown your mind. I don't know if any of you saw the making of the Five Heartbeats. If you saw that documentary that Robert did, you're gonna see a lot of familiar faces that came out to audition for that movie.
What?
Oh man, that's amazing. Yeah, that, I mean, like, it's so interesting. Like, we've talked about this kind of period of time in Black cinema because I feel like there was a nice renaissance in the early 90s of Black cinema, mm-hmm. and it feels like, you know, it took a dip in the 2000s for whatever reason. There was, yeah. you know, there were so many incredible Black filmmakers and actors. And then, as we've talked about many times on this podcast, Hollywood kind of stopped giving those people respect. I mean, there's many reasons for that. But this time, and you were certainly a part of that, and Robert Townsend was as well. He made so many incredible films. But this one, The Five Heartbeats, if you haven't seen it, it basically follows fictional group, kind of in the vein of like a Temptations, a Motown group that kind of the rise and fall of this boy band, which is also interesting too. I always think about the fact that like boy bands were, it's like, what was that documentary that talked about how white people kind of basically stole the Black boy, because black boy bands were a thing, and then white people were like, we should do that. We should kind of just...
There was a doc. Oh, crap. I saw it on YouTube. And it just goes through like how boys... No. It's one on Netflix called That's a Pop or This is Pop. And they talk about like the effect Boys the Men had on every white boy band after them. How they all just wanted to be Boys the Men, but end up making more money because they were white. And, you know, y'all touch on it in this movie, but like the crossover, like what the hell is a crossover? And the white boys just ended up, I guess, naturally being able to do it. It's so funny. I didn't know this band, low-key, I didn't know this group. I didn't know they were fake because I grew up and my aunts used to watch this movie so much. I thought the Five Heartbeats, like legitimately me and my girlfriend watched this and we were singing the music and I was like, oh, I remember this song. So I did not know it was a fictional band until right now.
Oh, wow.
Like right now.
You know, what's really funny is that, you know, there's so many things. We've had anniversaries with the Five Heartbeats. They just screened it at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. And, you know, it's just amazing how this film lives on and on and on. And it's so funny you say that because there have been times where people have come up and said, you know, finding out the Five Heartbeats wasn't a real group. That hit me like when I found out there was no Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yo, but that's real. Like I wanted to say something to Bray, like, hey man, I think that's a real group, bro. And I just Googled it and I'm like, oh, it's not.
Yeah, no.
Wait, just now you were gonna tell him in while we were recording?
No, I wasn't gonna say it. I wasn't.
He's trying to text me on the side and be like, hey, you embarrassing yourself, man.
I don't remember when I found out specifically, but I remember I lived a good amount of my life being like, yeah, the Five Heartbeats, like as they just as if y'all were a real group.
Oh my goodness.
I was just going to ask, like, did you do as an actor, like a lot of research into kind of these older groups? I know you also, because you were also in the Temptations, but was that after the Five Heartbeats, right?
Yeah, that was after the Five Heartbeats, yeah. You know, one thing with Robert is that Robert Townsend is, you know, he set out. He always tells us he was setting out to make a classic. I said, I want to make a classic.
Mm. Right.
There hasn't been a film with five Black men who stay together through thick and thin and go through times and tribulations and, you know, and that stay together. He said, I want to make a classic. And he kept saying that, you know. So his research of the times and the people we had, you know, Ruth Carter, an Academy Award for doing Panther. You know, that was like one of our first films. You know, it was like, everything, the details, all right. We were lucky enough that he shot things in a sequence in which we shot all the stuff in the early parts where our hair was comped, because that was real. That was our real hair. You know what I'm saying? Oh, we had to shoot it backwards. So all the stuff where I had was regular, we had to shoot that towards the end. And then we had to, because, you know, once you conk your hair, once you fry it,
yeah,
that's
right.
It.
Yo, like, y'all did that?
Wow. Yeah, you got to cut it off. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So that was interesting too. It was great. Everything was so authentic, you know, the costumes and everything else. And Robert had done so much research because it was his pet project since he was young.
Mm, right.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting you say, you know, that like the part of the motivation is like there hasn't been a movie where it's like it's five black men and they stay together. I find it interesting that part of the motivation for doing it is, you know, like, yeah, there isn't a story about black men staying together through thick and thin, because something that I find that I love about this is how at the end, everyone decide like they're there at that reunion together, you know, and decide to get up. And even after everything that happens, you know, they choose to stay together. I thought that was I think that's something amazing about this movie.
It is, you know, it's something that people take to heart. You know, I think, you know, Five Heartbeats has become like our family movie during Thanksgiving and Christmas. And, you know, Granddad, like, come on now, we're going to watch the Five Heartbeats. All the kids coming in, you know, you was probably one of them. You probably one boy, you was the other kid sitting there watching the Five Heartbeats.
Some of the first dance moves I ever learned were because of the Five Heartbeats. You know, I know they were probably borrowed from other bands, but I didn't know. You know, I wasn't alive when those bands were around, so it was just like I saw the Five Heartbeats. And I was like, oh, let me get this two step. You know?
it's so funny because Liam, right now I'm taking it to another movie like The Temptations. One of your lines from The Temptations is like really big on TikTok right now.
Yeah,
big everywhere,
nonstop. Do you find, because I will admit, growing up in my, talking about Thanksgiving and stuff, in my households, my family is like women dominated. Like we have more women than men. So there were two names we often heard, like Leon and Prince. You know what I mean? So it's like those were the things that we heard growing up. So I just am so curious to know, like, what is it like to go from just having that longevity of being, honestly, like a black sex symbol, like, because I think that's one of those things where sometimes we review movies and it's almost like the attraction is taken out of black men in some of these movies. But it feels like over the years, you've always had that kind of just air about you that just women seem to just gravitate towards. So like, how is that? I need to learn how to do that. That's why I was asking about the lotions and stuff earlier.
You know, for one thing, you know, if you know anything about me, I was born the only male in my generation. Mm. So I was around women my whole life. I learned to love women before I started wanting to have sex with them, which is rare.
Mm. Yeah.
and so I generally like women. And I think women are very intuitive. They can tell that about me. You know, my family owned a beauty salon. You know, it's like I knew everything about women. You know, women be talking. Remember back in the day where women used to try to tell you that their fake hair was real?
I do.
Yeah, remember them days when you used to try to play off? Like, now fake is like the thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
You know, girl, right. Girl have orange hair, and one day, and next day you see her, she blonde, and she's black.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, and it was funny because, you know, it's like, oh no, this is my real hair. And I'm like, she has no idea what my family does for a living. I could be around the corner and see a weave.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I can tell you what
kind of it is. You know what I'm saying? So the funny thing about, you know, that whole situation, I think that's what women are just, you know, kind of taken to me, and that's great. But going back to Hollywood, and you talk about, you know, the taking the romanticism and stuff out of black men. Okay, well, if that's the case, okay, which seems to be the case because women supported me my whole career, how come Hollywood hasn't given me those romantic roles?
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Why not?
Yes.
Is that you think people don't want to see that? I think they do.
Right.
See, that is the frustration. Like, that is the frustration, even when James mentioned, like, you know, 90s had a kind of renaissance, but then dipped in the 2000s. And now we kind of have this thing. Well, I just saw two movies today, two trailers for movies, which were like the black racism. One was at a school. The other one was like, a woman thought she was a slave, but wasn't a slave and got out. And I'm like, it is something about not having us in that romantic lead space. Like, it is frustrating. Like, hearing you say that is so frustrating.
It's so true. And we've talked about that on the show too, about how it's, I mean, this is like, you know, we haven't seen every single film, but we've been doing this for a while now. And we've reviewed a lot of movies. And we've talked about the fact that for like major motion pictures, there wasn't a a sex scene between a black man and a white woman that didn't have to do about race, like something like Jungle Fever, for instance, you know, until Focus, like where race wasn't kind of the central issue of the fact that of this relationship, or it's just, this is just a couple. This is a rom-com, you know, this is a romance film. You know, it's like Hollywood was like, well, we got to put the black men with the black women. And again, those kinds of relationships, obviously we want to see those relationships, but it was just interesting to see because they would always, if there was a black male lead and then a black female lead, then Hollywood would be like, well, that's a black movie and we're only going to sell that to black audiences. And that's not a crossover film, you know, which is, of course, the thing that we talk about in Five Heartbeats, too, which is interesting.
Also, yeah, you know, it's kind of like that thing when they didn't let black dudes swim in pools. So they were like, oh, man, they're going to take all our women. They can't have you out here in the romance movies, you know, where like Meryl Streep in them, because they're going to be like, God damn it. Now we can't put a white dude in another movie with Meryl Streep. Because they're like, all the women love this black dude. Now all the white dudes ain't gonna have no jobs. They don't want you taking
Meryl Streep. Your go-to is Meryl Streep.
I can't think of who does love cops.
There's always gonna be that fear that the person or race or anything that you try to put your foot on is gonna rise up on you. And I think, you know, we see a lot of it. I think we're seeing the backlash of that, of exactly that happening to us with Obama being president for 2 terms.
Yeah.
Right.
We're seeing the backlash of that now. So, you know, in reality, it's really not about what they're trying to do, because in essence, society is going to force their hand. You know, we live in a society now in America, the predominant race in America is mixed race. Well, how do you think that happened?
It's a lot of different, some storks or
that's a lot of brothers sneaking into some white clubs. That's a lot of brothers. You know what I'm saying?
That's real.
Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, man, you know, I just had a job end, which, you know, I was very fortunate to have, but it's so funny how quickly stress starts to accumulate when you're not working.
It's too much. It's too much. It's heavy.
You know,
I got the shakes, and you know, the heart palpitations, all of it.
I agree. I will say I've had the benefit of not being unemployed this long since 2009, and what are we in April? Soon to be May, and I have not had a paycheck all of 2024. So this is the most stress I've ever had. My parents may need to get an aid, and I'm like, who's coming to save the day? So stress is high. Anxiety is high.
And, you know, sometimes to talk about this stress, therapy can be a safe space. Like, get that stuff off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down, you know, instead of just keeping it all bottled up and feeling like you have to hold everything inside. I know therapy has helped me. I almost look at it as like check-in, like, sometimes I got a lot to say, sometimes not so much, but it's like, it is super, super helpful.
Yeah. I appreciate getting the tools to like kind of understand the mechanism of how I'm behaving, you know, and reacting in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I use BetterHelp, and Timothy, black male therapist, saves the day because he gets it, man. I'm like, you know what? Thank you, bro. For sometimes it's just 30 minutes of just me rambling. And I'm like, oh, you didn't even say hello yet. and he's like, keep going. I'm like, thank you. Yes.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule, which is absolutely essential these days. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you can get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you want, switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/jump today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/jump.
You gotta jump to get that BetterHelp. BetterHelp!
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartland!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
So, you open Google Chrome on your phone, you're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with, when you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no, he's coming your way. It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
What do you gravitate towards when you're picking like an acting role? Like where does that love come from? Like, is there certain parts that you really like? Are there certain people you really like working with? Or just like, how do you go about it?
Well, there's several factors, most important is the story. I'm a storyteller. And that's all that really matters is the story. I mean, the movies you're talking to me about is because you love the story. You might've liked me in it, but that's not why. You watch the movie. If the movie was whack, you don't care how good somebody is, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, who wins Academy Awards? Well, one of the actors that was in one of the best movies, nominated movies, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who wins MVP in the NBA? Well, usually the guy whose team had the most wins that season, right? I mean, that's just the way it is, So the story is important. That's what it's really about. It's about telling the story. And so once I like the story. Then it's about, what part am I playing in the story? Is it an important part? Because that's what's important to me. If you can tell the story without my character, I'm usually not that interested.
Yeah.
Right. And to that point, too, do you feel like, have there been roles that you've been offered where you felt like, you know what? I don't know if this is a good look, should I say? Or like, there is a stereotype being played here and it feels like the people telling it kind of aren't doing it in good faith, for instance, or it's not trying to reveal something or you keep getting boxed into a certain kind of role. Have you had to come across that in your career?
Yeah, of course. You read something like this. Nah, this could be way better. And especially when you read it today, where so many people in the business are woke, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're like,
right.
Nah. This ain't flying today. Yeah. Come on.
Right.
Really.
That's so cool just even thinking about that, because watching movies slowly become woke over time, it's just so interesting seeing, even where movies were 5 years ago as compared to where they are now. Like, are there certain things that you would want to see in films that you start choosing? Like, hey, man, like, no more... I don't know, like crackheads in this movie, or no more like, because I know one of the things that is really stopping me from watching some of these movies is that it does feel like it's a new take on not slavery, but racism that we have to face versus just a black doctor trying to save this baby and keep his marriage together,
I like to be real. Okay. So when you say you hope there's no movies, maybe say like with no more crackheads in it. Well, yeah. I wouldn't mind that either, as long as there were no more crackheads.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying?
Facts.
Right. But if crack is something that is prevalent in our society, then if we're telling true stories, especially as black filmmakers, okay, we're going to include those things because those are the things around us that we see, that we know about, that we have knowledge of. Okay. And so, but the whole thing is what I think everyone in this business has always strived for is diversity. Okay. Like, I don't know any of you brothers. Okay. But I'm willing to bet that we are very different in a lot of different ways. Okay. Why can't we see that on screen?
Hey, amen.
Absolutely.
Amen.
That's what we're all fighting for. We all like, we're different in a lot of different ways. I bet you all four of us like different type of women.
Yep.
That's very true.
But if we were in a movie, we'd all have to like the same kind of woman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or we couldn't all be in the same kind of movie because it's like you got two of us. So it's like, we got two. They all the same.
Yeah.
Let me go back to something that happened to me early in my career, right? in the 80s when I first started. I did a movie that was on the lot at 20th Century Fox. And I had a meeting with this executive because they were interested in me because they liked my performance and thought I was an up-and-coming actor. And I was having a conversation with him, and he was talking about this upcoming film that they were developing, and they were interested in me being in it. He was telling me about it. And it was a situation, you know, a typical situation. They had one of their, you know, young white actors, Brat Pack-type actors, whatever. It was kind of, you know, romantic comedy. And you know, I'm the best friend. He sees the girl, the lead girl of the movie, and, you know, they get together, whatever. So I said to him, I said, well, I don't see the girl too. And he goes, yeah, but you know, they're the ones together. He said, again, no, I understand that. And that's cool. That's, you know, that's the way the movie is. But I said, but she don't notice me? Like, am I unnoticeable? Right? Like, yeah. That's all I'm saying. I was like,
right.
Because, you know, look, all of us, we got friends. I'm sure if we all walk slide, I got plenty of white friends, probably too many. And the thing is, realistically, if I went to a party or club with any of my boys, okay, whether he's a model, actor, whatever, and we meet some chicks, it's like, I'm probably going to get some play.
Yeah. At least get a hello. At least get a wave.
I don't have to wind up with her in the movie, but come on, don't treat me like right. I'm a statue. You know, me my black friend, he's a statue.
Yeah. He's only gonna help me make you fall in love with me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna like me more because I have a black friend.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And that, you know, it harkens back to what we were talking about like desexualizing black actors. You know, it's like when a lot of times in these movies, it is like sort of like we're doing diversity. So we're going to cast the best friend who doesn't have sex or is never dating or isn't as a person of color. And then they, like you said, she don't see you. They literally are. Invisible unless they're doing, you know, whatever the tropes are that they wrote for this sidekick.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but you see the comic relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You still doing that? Those auditions are still coming.
Well, if you let them, without a doubt. Yeah.
Something that stood out to me in taking it back to the Five Heartbeats for a second, if I can, is the comedy in that movie, you know, and I don't know how much of this in particular you recall, Leon, but like, what was the like approach to comedy of that film? Because you know, it has a lot of heart, you know, and it also obviously goes to some heavy places, but there is, you know, there's a lot of comedy evenly throughout it. I just don't know if you could speak to that.
Yeah, specifically, if I could reference a moment in the scene, which is so good. There is a scene where basically your character is talking about a sex addiction, but I think it's referred to as like a dick addiction.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, a dick problem.
A dick problem. It's like, I just like my dick just can't say no, which was so funny because it was like it's talking about a thing that actually now like people, you know, people take seriously, but like kind of then like nobody would necessarily take that seriously. But it was like this kind of a fun way to like disarm the audience and bring in this real thing that your kind of character was going through.
Well, you know, that's Robert Townsend. I mean, you have to realize as serious and as thought provoking and groundbreaking in some ways that The Five Heartbeats is, just remember that the writer and director is a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Keenan, right?
Yeah, right. So you got to remember, you know, Robert's, he's not going to leave the comedy behind unless he has to.
Right. It's so funny. He was, you know, in many, many ways, you know, kind of, he set the mold for Jordan Peele, for somebody like Jordan Peele, for instance, who crossed over from comedy into directing and writing. And yeah, I mean, I know it's as us, like the three of us, obviously we do comedy, and that is definitely something that it's like him, like he is one of him and like Keenan and the Wayans family. Honestly, they're just like they've been such trailblazers in that kind of arena.
Yeah, they've paved the way for so many that. you know, people that are out there today, you know, whether filmmakers or stand-up comics or stand-up comics becoming filmmakers, you know, it's just being able to express yourself in other mediums, you know, and taking it to another level. I think, you know, Robert Townsend, you know, Keenan, Ivory Wayans, you know, both of them, the two writers of the Five Harpies, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of comedy, I know we're supposed to be talking about Five Heartbeats, but we're talking about comedy now. One of the movies I've always loved was Cool Runnings. And the thing I really like, and one of the things that I find very fascinating, is the jumping back and forth between dramatic acting and then comedic acting. And I feel like a lot of times comedy, people be trying to play comics like, you know, being in a comedy is easy, but then sometimes a dramatic actor can't make that switch. And watching you and Cool Runnings felt like, this is what I'm talking about. This is how you kind of go from a drama to a comedy, but still act with the stakes intact, which helps with the jokes.
And the authenticity of the character.
Authenticity, yes. Do you find that when you go from comedy to drama, do you change any of your mechanics when it comes to acting? Or is it just kind of playing the world for what it is?
Well, back to what I was telling you before, you know, what drives me is the story. And whether the story is comedic, you know, or heart-wrenching, or action, anything else, as far as I'm concerned as the actor, my job is to breathe life into the writer's words and to make my character real for you, okay? And so that's what I do in almost every role. And I think in a comedy, it's even more important, because as soon as you believe that I am who I'm playing, I can take you anywhere. Anywhere. You go to the moon with me, you don't care. You get in a bobsled with me, you know? Like, you know what I'm saying? You'll do it. And you'll be like, I'll take you to bobsled. You'll be like, yeah, go Jamaica. You're like, you know what I'm saying?
So, 100%.
So the thing is, so like, for example, like Cool Runnings, since you brought that up, like in prepping for Cool Runnings. So everywhere in my place where I live, there are pictures of every, you know, like athlete, sprinter, black sprinters like that. And when I'm working out, I'm looking at my body to make sure that when you see me, because the whole opening of the movie is just me running through Jamaica. Mm-hmm. That's the opening credits and everything. Right. Yeah. So you got to believe, when you see me running, you're like, oh, well, that's an athlete right there. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, yeah. like, I don't even say anything. Like, you know what I'm saying? that I got you sold there. Okay? And I think that's important. You know, and it's the same thing, because, you know, I've been doing a lot of press for A Day to Die. And it's the same thing. So it's like, when you see me for the first time in that movie, you're like, oh yeah, okay, that nigga's bad. I'm not fucking with him. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's like,
and once you do that, then you understand why everyone in the movie, even when I'm not on screen, they're talking about me. They're scared of me. You know what I'm saying? You get it, because of the first, when you saw me, you weren't thinking Leon, you weren't thinking nothing. You're just thinking, oh, this motherfucker right here, he's not to be played with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and I think that's important in any role, whether it's comedy or anything else, is to make you believe that I am who I am. That is the most important thing for me.
Yeah, that's real.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, speaking of A Day to Die, I feel like sometimes the most fun roles, especially to see some of your favorite actors see, is the role of a villain. And kind of to your point, like, especially a villain that can has such a command of presence on screen that without even saying much, you can go, oh, that's a bad dude. Because I will say, I won't disparage anybody by name, but there have been a few action films that I've seen where you see a bad guy on the screen and you're like, you know, and it kind of ruins the movie.
Yeah, you sit there looking like, you're looking at him like, oh, I can take his ass.
Yes, yes. Yes.
You're like, yo, man, come on.
Yeah. You're like, is he just paying everybody, or what's going on?
You're going to fight him? Stop it.
Yeah. I mean, he better have a real bad henchman, you know?
Right, but you know, the thing is, what's important is, it's like, you know, for example, in A Day to Die, that's such an important role in the movie that if it's not, the movie's dead.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because people ask me, you know, did you like taking a role? I said, dude, it's a role. It's me against the world. Why? Of course I'm going to like that role. You know what I'm saying? You asking me to chew up scenery and do the things that I do? I'm like, come on. It's like when I'm in my office right there during the movie, that's like, you can tell I spent a lot of time in that office, right? You would think, you saw me, when you see me in there, you're like, oh, he in there every day.
Yeah.
Right? Because, yeah, you know, I'm the type of actor where, like, when people go to the trailers in between scenes, I stay in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I want the room to feel like it's my spot.
Right.
Because if it feels like it's my spot to me,
oh wow, yeah,
you're going to get that on screen. You're going to get it. You're going to get how familiar I am with my place. When I'm sitting at that desk drinking that cognac, you're like, oh, this is smoking a joint. Like, this is him on the regular.
Yeah, yeah.
This is him on the regular, you know?
That's fine.
Except my ladies, they look at it like, oh, that scene where you in the bathroom smoking a joint. Like, that was real, right?
That's so funny. When you do a role, people start questioning you in real life. Hey, man, was that real?
I love that.
Yeah. Was that filmed at your crib?
Oh, man.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else. Like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or 5-star hotels for 2-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Kroger, we know the minute a tomato is picked off the vine, the fresh timer starts. The sooner we get our produce to you, the fresher it is. That's why we've completely overhauled our process to shorten the time from harvest to home for our tomatoes, strawberries, and salads. Because we know how much you love fresh produce, we give you more time to enjoy your tasty fruits and veggies at home. So whether you're shopping in-store, picking up, or prefer delivery, we're committed to bringing you the freshest produce possible. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is just fun. I was trying to think, like, when it comes, I guess it's the same thing. Do you have a preferred love? Like, for instance, like the action stuff, because I always think that's so cool to play versus like the more heavy dramas versus like the musicals. Is there like a genre that you're like, this is, you know, this is the thing I just, of course, acting you would do all day, but like the preferred genre you would do all day, you know?
Well, if you're asking me the preferred movie that I would do.
Uh-huh.
All day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my favorite movies are movies that are seen.
That's are real. People gonna come see it?
Those are I'll my favorite that. Movies. The ones that everybody sees.
Yo, okay? that was so
that
real.
So real.
That was so real. Oh shit.
And it's hard. I mean, like, it's so interesting. I mean, it could also, you highlighted movies, but like, you've obviously had a lot of television success as well. And I think, I don't know, we're living in this time where it's weird because, you know, I mean, the it was already kind of headed in this direction because you have these huge franchises, Marvel and the superhero films and things like that. And the kind of like mid-level movies been pushed to the side a little bit. There aren't as many of those being produced. It's like, people, they always like, you know, it seems like Hollywood wants to make reboots and sequels and prequels and those kinds of things.
Well, you're talking, well, those movies are being made, but you're not seeing them.
But they're not, you're not seeing them. They're not being pushed. They're not being marketed.
That's the problem. They're not being picked up for distribution and not being marketed. The unfortunate part about even this movie that I have coming out tomorrow, you know, we have a situation there that we're about to get into. And if you know me at the course of my career, you know, I'm not a controversial guy. You don't see me, you know, involved in messes or, you know, playing that, because that's just not who I am. But I'm also someone who's going to stand by my principles on certain things, you know? And you see a movie like A Day to Die. Well, I was just at a screening yesterday. You know, when I come on screen, the audience starts cheering, okay? And after the movie, that's what the critics and that's what all the friends, they're talking about me. Would you believe? And that's a film directed by a Black director. that takes place in the hood. Okay? They put out a poster that didn't have me on it or even where it took place. They made it look like a war movie with Frank Grillo and Bruce Willis and Kevin Dillon. So basically what you did is, none of you or myself, we would probably never even see the movie. We don't even know the movie takes place in the hood. We don't know the character, the predominant characters like that is black. We don't know the film's a black director. They cut out that whole audience right there. And let me tell you something. We had a screening in Harlem just for that reason, because they were crazy for it. So explain that to me. This is 2022. 2022, we're talking about this.
Since you're keeping it 100, we'll keep it 100 too. because when we got sent the email with the poster for this, we were confused at first because we didn't see, you know, it was like exactly what you're saying. People can go look this up, but the main poster of this doesn't have Leon's name, doesn't even have his name on it, let alone, you know, him. And it's just like, and we were like,
and that is not the poster that is used by the producer, director, or anyone else. There's other artwork that's being done. Okay.
Yeah, it's on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that, which I don't. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that you're looking at that poster, you have no idea what that movie's about in any way, shape, or form. You have no idea that there's any black element at all. The movie was shot in Jackson, Mississippi.
Wow.
In the hood by a black director. Okay. And that's the poster you put out.
It's that thing where I feel like everyone keeps talking about diversity, but we've talked about it on the podcast, so I guess I harp on it a lot, where we see these movies, they put one black person in the movie, but then still keep like the well-known white dude as a lead. And it's just, it hasn't changed the landscape that much. It's literally still hiding black people in ways, but you're putting one black person or two black people, you know, either behind the scenes or in front of it. And that way they can say, oh, it's a diverse film. And it almost stops them from getting dragged. You know what I mean? But the fact that like you're in this movie, your director's black, and like we don't know that is why, honestly, why Twitter is hopeful. Like that is why people should like be dragging these films, because they feel like, oh, we did our part. Now you got me mad.
Well, listen. Let me tell you something. Like these are things that I'm not happy about, but I wouldn't even tell you guys about it if I didn't want you to know. I want you to know because you have a voice. You're putting a voice out there and people need to know this. Okay? Because for me, at this particular point in my career, I'm always trying to make it for the next brother better. Make things better for the next brother coming after me. Okay? I don't want this happening. Okay? This is ridiculous. Okay? I don't put in too much of my hard work. Like, can I ask you something? What is the number one way of marketing films and anything right now?
So how I see a lot of things for me is like social.
Social media. Right. Exactly. They ain't nobody in that film got more followers than me on social media.
Yeah, man.
What I got to do? I got to go to every beauty salon and let every woman come out there and say, his movie's on right now. Are you crazy? Like, what I got to do?
You got to share that poster with the white people on it. Like you gotta tweet the poster with the white people.
No, listen, this is exact. You're my first interview. I've been doing press all week. You're my first interview in which I decided to talk about this. I'm gonna be talking about it more. But I just decided, got the phone with the director. I was like, you know what, man? Nah, I'm not being quiet about this.
I don't think you should be. You know, Faison Love was removed from the international poster for a couples retreat. And Ernie Hudson, one of the four Ghostbusters, isn't on any of the Ghostbusters covers. It's been going on for so long, you know.
Yeah, right. But you know what? They're right. But we got to say something about it. We got to stop this, especially in this climate where we have a voice, where people act like they're caring about this.
Exactly. And it's so funny. We've been talking about the Five Heartbeats as well. And one of the major kind of scenes of this movie is they get their album cover and they're like, hey, so by the way, there's this album cover. And like, don't worry about this. And they're like, don't worry about what? And you see the album cover and it's like a white family on a beach. It's like, what? what is this? And it was, so there, it's okay for them to hear our voice. It's okay for them to like take our money to you know what I mean, to market us in this way. But then when it comes to like, well, we, you know, it's complicated. It's like we just want the crossover appeal. And what that means generally is, well, if we put somebody black on this, then white people won't want to see this, which is insane too. By, I mean, especially today.
What it's also doing is they're saying is that the black dollar don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're not letting black people even know they want to see this film. And it's so funny you mentioned that part about the five Harveys, because that's what I felt like.
Right.
Yeah.
I just made a movie with a brother, okay, that took place in the hood, which I already know my character dominates, okay? And I go and look at the poster. That shit looks like it takes place in Vietnam.
It does. Yeah. It really does.
And yeah, it looks like it takes place in Vietnam with three white actors fighting for the cause.
Right.
And also, arguably, this is one of those movies where there could be a poster that is only you. You know what I mean? Like, there could be a poster that is you front and center, you know, with the...
hold a second. There is one. The producer made one just like that because he was like, this is what it needs to be.
Oh, wow. Oh, we'll tweet that. We'll tweet that one out.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm going to find that. We're going to tweet that one out.
If you don't have that poster... I'll make sure that Bree, my publicist, gets it to you right after.
Please,
send it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it is frustrating, and I'm happy you actually brought it up, because I think a lot of times we review movies on this podcast and we talk about things, and I feel like sometimes people don't believe that they still happen. I feel like we live in a time where, especially in Hollywood, people like to pat themselves on the back and say, hey, we did a good job. But hearing you here promoting a movie and you're like, yo, this movie had a black director, which I literally looked them up right now. I was like, yo, I thought this was a white movie. Literally, when your name came through, I said, hey, man, like, Bruce, there's a bunch of white people in this movie. That was my response. That was my response. There's a bunch of white people in this movie, man.
Because they showed us that poster, and we were like, why did they want us to talk about this film with three white actors?
But it's really important, because people need to hear, like, this stuff actually happens on a regular basis, where, again, it is that kind of things we talk about in the Five Harveys. What people bring up about, you know, Elvis and things like this, like, people will use black folk in a way, but then almost remove them and put a white face in front, almost like they did most of the work, which really hurts, because we just keep seeing that shit continue.
You know what? Okay, so I want to dig this even further, because I definitely want to talk about, you know, A Day to Die. So Wes Miller, talented director, he has a great eye. I'm gonna love to work with him again, and we plan on doing that again. But more importantly, what's really crazy is that he created a villain in this movie, right? That not only is interesting, but the thing is, I don't want to be a spoiler, but we already know that it's not your typical villain. And how things get flipped in the end, you know, is like, it's kind of very positive, okay? So now you have a different type of villain, a brother, doing stuff illegally, but for a different reason, in a kind of Robin Hood kind of way. We're not promoting that to our people,
dude. It's infuriating.
But wait a second, and this is what's really crazy about it. What's really crazy about this is everyone will say at the end of the day, "We'll do this about money." It's about money,
right?
Okay. Well, if it's about money, you got three guys here, and you're gonna cut out this whole other section. You're already gonna get this audience. But you're basically cutting out the black and brown audience for seeing your work. So you're costing yourself money.
Exactly. Because to your point.
Because you honestly think that if white people see me on a poster, oh, no, we can't watch it now.
No way.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. What is that?
The pool has been tainted.
Go back to the pool, man. Go back to the pool.
But that's the thing. And that's the thing that is so frustrating.
The pool has been tainted. Everybody get out the pool. Get out the pool. Yo, my brother jumped in.
They've done studies. They've shown, one, just like on the average, you know, when you compare like percentages and stuff, there's like, black people go to the movies. They go to the movies usually more than white people do. They go to the movies all the time.
Because we need this.
Yeah, it's our time out. It's our break.
Hey, what you talking about? We need
Here's
to
how
escape.
Much black people love movies. There are decades in which there are no black people in films, or when there were only black people in films, there were only like maids and slaves and gangsters or whatever. And it's like, we still went to the movies.
It, you know it what I was mean? Our night
we,
out.
We saw those movies. So But more importantly, yeah.
Because you guys saw the movie. You know this is the kind of movie our brothers and sisters like.
Right.
It is very difficult because the thing is, it just takes faith in that. It just takes faith in like, hey, man, if you promote it to the right people, you will find it. Like, niche is okay. Like, I remember hearing Issa Rae talk about it. It's like, having your niche and serving that niche is cool because they will support the shit out of you. Plus, honestly, let's be real. When Black folk think stuff is cool, it becomes cool. You know what I mean? It's like, the moment we like it, everybody's like, yo, we gotta fuck with this. It's like, just market it to us so we can vet it. Like, literally, you would want our stamp to say, like, boom. This is the good thing.
Who's the number one consumer of hip hop?
I think and rap. Is that white folk? I think is that white folk?
white kids. Yeah. Okay. That's who is the number one consumer. Okay.
Gotta be real about it.
All right. Yeah. So when you see a movie take place doing this rap music and everything else, you know this. They try to get their street cred. Yes. That's how they watch the movie.
Then they quote it back to you. I mean, I've had so many people like in meetings bring up Belly. Oh man, I used to love Wu-Tang. I'm like, bruh, listen, I get that you used to watch this on TV, but please believe me, I know a little bit more about it than you do. So it's like, yeah, you reported it to the Black folk. Damn, y'all about to have me have to go take a drink.
But you know what's really funny too? You know what's really funny though is when the brother goes in for a meeting, for a movie, whatever, and he's talking about, oh, I love Wu-Tang and everything else. And that brother went to private school. He wasn't listening to none of that. And, but because of his color of skin, he wants to start talking to him about Wu-Tang.
See, now you got to have me off tangent. I was talking to my friend today about the parallels of like what is acceptable Black when it comes to like pitching things nowadays. Because I feel like you know, there is a type of Black person I think that we as in Hollywood are like Hollywood hasn't serviced yet because I feel like they don't look up to, you know, the people who I will say quote unquote are from around the way, like ones that started saying Cookout before Cookout was cool. The ones who like actually listened to Wu-Tang, the ones who like was doing Electric Slide, like just at like a birthday party. Like we don't service those people because then when we have the Black people who do get on, they are oftentimes the ones who like went to these fancy schools who deserve to be there too, but we never see the other half, because the other half is deemed like the quote unquote, like Braylock said earlier, the Black film, the one that seems lesser, even though it's the same type of quality. Matter of fact, I think, was it the Hollywood Reporter right now? Or someone they're running a cover or article of like Black famous. And they're just talking to like Black people about what it's like just to be Black famous. And the connotation feels weird to me because if you do have one of these quote unquote crossover actors who are Black and something goes wrong, the people who usually stick up and support them are the Black folk, you know what I mean? That almost was kind of neglected.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week, we had a very special guest, Hiss Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week, on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/officehourslive.
Like, I literally was reading the article today and I was so pissed about it of like the Black famous where it's like, no man, this is fucking famous. To be known is hard. You know what I mean? Like that is hard.
But you know, but the one thing about that though is about the Black famous thing is like, well, you know, almost goes back to like, I think, take it back to the Negro League in baseball. Satchel Paige, all these dudes that they know would just destroy Major League Baseball. They wouldn't let in, all right? Until they were too old, you know, and then they would let in, you know, but they wasn't killing them, you know what I'm saying? But it's the same way. It's like, okay, so you mean to tell me that you're going to make a film and you want to get the support of the Black audience? Well, I think you should do some research. Who do Black people like?
Right.
Who do Black people like? Like, throw some names out to Black people. Go in a beauty salon and throw some names out. They're going to tell you who the fuck they want to see in the movie.
Right.
They're going to tell you straight up. Like, yeah, he all right. Yeah, he all right. Yeah. Nah, you need to make so-and-so.
Right.
You need to put him in the movie. Yo, watch him in this movie. You won't forget his ass. put him in the movie. That's what we like to watch.
Yes.
You watching my movies, they watching my movies 20, 30 times over again, okay? Which to me, wait a second, I feel completely blessed by that because I always wanted to do, it's all I ever wanted to do is do memorable work, work that lasts past my time. So for that, I feel very appreciative. But you're also watching my movies 20, 30 times because they ain't giving me new ones.
Right. Oh, so true. It's so
if you sit around and say, oh, I love Leon's like that, you'll go watch an old movie.
It's so real. I mean, like, especially now, I don't want to disparage other white actors, but there are certain people who I'll see and they're gonna, because I don't know, we're in this time now where people are like, they want to attach celebrities to everything. But they always seem to drag up older white celebrities, like who were in like some television show that, you know, people watch for a couple of seasons and that's all they did. But like now that person's the lead of another some prestige show where they're being put in these movies. And I'm like, you had all these black actors who were crushing it, who were doing, the box office numbers were hot. People were, like you're saying, were seeing their films dozens and dozens of times. They still reference them to this day. And yet, why are we not seeing those actors get the chances again? Like, I don't, that's the part that I don't understand, because there is a one time where Hollywood could be like, oh, well, you know, that person's time has passed, but we know that's not true anymore. Okay. We see so many old actors getting brought out the woodwork, being put in things. And you're like, this person was famous for 2 seconds and they weren't even that great when they were. And meanwhile, meanwhile, we got these people who are in movies that like, we're given a $3 million budget and they wound up doing 40, 50 million at the box office, just making crazy amount of money for what they were given. And yet, where are their roles? That's the part that I don't get.
Yeah. And you know, but listen, a big part of it, and we go back to the whole topic we were talking about before, a big part of it is marketing and how you put stuff out. When, you know, like if I've done any interviews more than anything else, is talking about why the Five Heartbeats didn't do well at the box office. That was voted the number one movie for African Americans by AOL. Okay? Over The Color Purple. Okay? Why didn't it do well? It was the marketing. Robert fought them. 4 weeks before the movies come out, there was still no trailer in there. Because the trailer that they had was just us dancing and stuff with our hairs conked. You know, brothers is like looking at this like, and wait, and this is like New Jack City's coming out. Right. So they got us on the trailer for New Jack City. They're like, what the fuck is this? These are, you know, like, why aren't you seeing Big Red hang my man out the window? You know, why aren't you seeing, like, you know, say like, we want to see some controversy. We want to see people go with that.
There's an incredible, you know, chase scene in the beginning.
Yes, and he comes in singing. Come on, man.
So after a while, Robert has to give in to him because he got to have some trail out there. And then he's saying, look, you got to put our poster on buses and train stations and stuff. That's where our people are. You ever see a Spike Lee movie where you don't see his thing on every bus stop?
Right.
That's because we ride the bus.
Right, exactly. We in the inner city.
It's so crazy, even you hear they say that. It's like, there have been interviews with Spike recently, because I think, you know, he's in that golden era, him and Sam Jackson, where they just call people out. Like, you know, Sam just had an interview where he talked about how he should have not only should he have won more than one Oscar, but he says the movie he should have won for, and then like talks about the people who got nominated. And even thinking about Spike even talked about making, was it Miracle at St. Anna, and having to pay for promotion like himself. And I'm like, this is a dude that Hollywood talks about. Like one of the black auteur, you know what I mean?
There are very few directors whose names people know, and Spike Lee is one of them. You know what I mean? Everybody knows who Spike Lee is. He shouldn't be having to-
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Black, white, whatever.
He was talking about recently, I forgot which movie he had that came out. Oh, was it Black Klansman? He was talking about basically he had some movie come out, but he couldn't get enough money for it because they were putting so much money into de-aging Robert De Niro. The Five Bloods. He was talking about what he had to go through with The Five Bloods because a lot of the money they spent on this white movie, de-aging like a 70-year-old Robert De Niro for an entire movie. And like, and that's the dude.
That was the Scorsese movie.
And it's like, you know, if you think about it, like, Spike was a dude, and to hear this black man who's done so much still have to go through the same thing is like, goddamn, you know?
That just, you just made me realize that they will literally spend like 20, whatever, millions and millions of dollars just so an older white actor can play a part that they've aged out of before giving it to a black, you know what I mean? Like, I know that that movie was like specific.
And that movie with De Niro stuff, that movie was like two years in the making. They shot it, then they had to shut down. Then they looked at it, then the whole aging process of what they could do on film changed during the whole process. So they had to go reshoot stuff so they could use the new technology.
And not to mention, Five Bloods also has de-aging in it. they had to use makeup.
Yeah.
That's what they had to use.
I think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, it's going to have to be like us, our generation, to look out. Like, when I think about, you know, what Quentin Tarantino does. Like, Quentin Tarantino will put whatever dude, like what Braylock is saying, I used to watch this movie on public access TV. I thought he was great. Quentin will put that dude in the movie and give him a juicy part. I think it's now for us to be like, all right, bet. These are the people we grew up loving. Let's do the thing once we get on. You know, I think the hard part is getting on, of course, but...
That, you know, wait a second. Exactly. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, that we have black directors out there. We have black producers out there that are doing well. I'm so happy. I am so happy. But yeah, put down the people you know we love.
That's the only way to do it. Yeah, no, man.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, Tarantino was great at that. Tarantino got a hot movie. You know what he said? First person I'm putting Whistain back on, John Travolta, because that's who was the shit when I was
That's literally what he did.
Right.
And he put him on. His career's gone from there. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, and the thing is, I'm sorry about that. The thing is also is that we have, I mean, dude, do you know how many times I run up on a producer, director, actor? I ain't gonna mention any names because I'm not a name dropper like that. But especially if it's any controversy, they go like this. Oh, Leon, yo, dude, I gotta work with you. Dude. Like, that's bucket list for me. And I'd be like, just call. call and let's see what happens. You know, but if you don't make that call, it ain't really on your bucket list unless your bucket is real goddamn big.
Yeah.
That's what I think it is. I mean, I judge people by, like, my girlfriend gets mad at me because I will look at who shows up to what award show. So if I see a famous black actor show up to, like, you know, SAG or the Oscars, but then don't show up to the NAACP Awards or the African Critics Festival. I'm like, it's hard because, yes, you could be busy. You could be busy. But some niggas sending in tapes. So I'm like, you can at least do something on your phone and, like, send in the tape. But if you make time to go to those white events and not the one that has always looked out for us when no one has, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very tough for me.
The one that was created for us. Because no one else was. Created because we weren't including the other ones.
It's tough, man. It's real tough because there's certain people who, like, you know, people I love, you know, who I'm noticing now as an adult who you won't see on Ebony like that, but you will see him on THR. You won't see at the NAACP Awards, but you will see at SAG. You know, it's won't see at the BET Awards, but we'll be at the Oscars. And it's like, we are picking it. That little subtle things picks and chooses, like, what community you really want to be a part of. You could do all of it. Which is, do all of it if you want to do some of it, but then you actively choosing not to do the black ones kind of says something about what you think this base is to me, which sucks.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, I don't really know, but if that is the case, you know, an acting career is like this for almost every actor. It's like this. And that's only if you're an actor like me who works for like three decades.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Most people I started with ain't even around. So what I'm saying is that,
right, exactly,
when you aren't as hot, okay, it's that base that supports you.
Exactly.
It's like, oh shit, now you showing up at the Image Awards. Now you showing up at the BET Awards. Okay. Because you ain't as hot as before. Okay. But when you was hot, you was gonna get more eyes on the show because you was showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Man, this was fun. Okay. Leon, yeah, man, thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything else? We've talked about a lot. I mean, this has been incredible. Is there anything else you'd like to say or talk about before we start wrapping it up?
No, nothing. I appreciate this conversation. You know, it went all around the world.
We really did.
But it touched some really good points. I really want people to go see A Day to Die.
Yeah, man.
I'm proud of my work in that movie. I'm proud of Wes Miller's work. I want to see him get more movies with bigger budgets.
Yes.
We gotta support us. And yeah, get the word out there, because they damn sure not gonna get the word from looking at that poster.
No, man, please.
Send us that poster.
Yeah, man, we'll send that up.
You will get that tonight.
Awesome. Yeah.
Even if I got to get on a plane to deliver it to you at your door. Like, yo, Leon at the door. God damn. Yes.
He got the poster with him. He got the poster.
Yeah. He signed it too.
Dude, I love that.
Yeah, please, everyone listening, A Day to Die. It's in theaters right now. You can see it in theaters and on demand. So whatever, you know, whatever you prefer, that is the world that we live in nowadays. You know, if you're too scared to go outside. That said, I think, you know, we unfortunately didn't get to see it in theaters, but I actually feel like this is a movie you want to see in theaters. You know what I mean? You want to go see this. You want to get this in theaters.
Yeah, man. Get that energy. Get that energy.
Thank you so much again, Leon, for doing this with us. This has been honestly an absolute pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely, I enjoyed it. I want you young brothers to keep doing your thing, all right?
All right. Well, you can follow us at Black Men Podcast. BlackMenPodcast.com is our website. You got links to merchandise. We got links to a defunct Patreon. No new episodes on there, but there is a year's worth of episodes if you give us $5 a month and for however long you like to do that. It helps support the show. Also, you can rate and review us. If you give us 5 stars on iTunes, we will read your review on the air. As I pull that up, Gerard, you want to plug our socials?
Yes, you can follow me at Gerard Milligan on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow James at James Third Comedy, and his website is jamesthirdcomedy.com. Braylock is at John Braylock on Twitter and Instagram, right? There we go. Right. There we go.
And this review is by Waterfalls of Consciousness. That is quite the name.
Wow. Waterfalls of Consciousness.
Waterfalls of Consciousness says, that's what I'm talking about. What? What's up, fellas? I am an avid hip hop listener like most of the world, and Tupac Shakur is automatically in everyone's top 5 of hip hop icons. It would be cool that's to right. honor his acting chops as well. We have done a few.
We did Poetic Justice.
We did Poetic Justice.
And Juice.
Juice, there he is. He says, in his film Gridlocked, he plays a realistic version of a troubled musician who happens to be addicted to narcotics. His partner, played by Tim Roth, are trying to get both of them off the streets, running from gangsters, cops. It's a great film worth reviewing. All right. Well, we will add that to our list as well. We do have a list that Letterboxd Black Men Can't Jump, I think. So if you want to...
Bro, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't
You know,
know,
send us movies to review, you can. And that is... I mean, we didn't give a rating to the 5 Heartbeats with Leon there, but...
You know it's all fist. You know it's all fist.
You know it's all fist. You know it's 3 black fists.
You know it's all fist. Don't play those games.
You knew what was happening.
We didn't have to do it.
We didn't have to do it.
We knew.
You understood it. All right. Well, you know what? We'll see you next week.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, produced by Melissa D. Montz, executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.
What's up, Black Men Can't Jump comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!